You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated...
It is Thursday, February 14th, 2013. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, after being arrested in front of the White House yesterday, as a protest against the Keystone XL pipeline, Robert Kennedy Jr. will be joining us. Also on the program, hidden microphones throughout Guantanamo, recording, presumably, privileged conversations between lawyers and defendants. Also on the program today, Scott Brown. Looks like that dude is not going to be governor. More of my Massachusetts accent later in the program. Also, more out of that cesspool that is FreedomWorks. The richest amongst us got significantly richer in the anemic recovery of the past couple of years, and actually got more than 100% of income gains. How does that work? I will tell you. The GAO, the Government Accountability Office, announces that climate change is going to create a high-risk situation for our government's finances in 2013. Meanwhile, speaking of finance, Ron Paul, in a bitter fight with, I guess now, his former fans, using the UN to adjudicate. Yes, you heard that right. That's gotta hurt. That's definitely gotta hurt. One can only imagine what Thanksgiving's going to be like at the Paul house when Daddy starts touting the wonderful aspects of the United Nations to his son Rand. I still wouldn't want to be there. This story is fascinating. What's happening now? Tomorrow, the Senate is scheduled to vote on the Chuck Hagel nomination to Secretary of Defense. There has never been a time in American history when a Secretary of Defense, in fact, as far as I know, a top cabinet official, has been filibustered. And it's very possible that we're going to see it for the first time tomorrow. We know that Harry Reid basically did not honor an attempt to put a hold on this nomination and is forcing the Republicans to either give Hagel an up or down vote or to filibuster in an unprecedented move. This, of course, is contrary to every proclamation made by just about every Republican who has been in the Senate for more than a couple of years, saying that a president has the right to have his nominees have an up or down vote. We see it with judicial nominees, but never for cabinet posts, and particularly Secretary of Defense. You recall, folks, that we're in a state of perpetual war. And I don't think there's a single senator who would argue that we're not. And I would argue that we're in this perpetual state for the worse. But the fact of the matter is that had this been done during the Bush administration, they would already be, the Republicans would already be raising treason trials for the senators. As of now, there are 55 votes in the Senate, 53 Democrats, two independents, who will vote for cloture. There are three Republicans, Mike Johanns from Nebraska, Susan Collins from Maine, and Tad Cochran, who will vote for cloture. Senator John McCain has in the past said that he would vote for cloture, but, you know, Benghazi. How can we vote to have a Secretary of Defense who was not involved in Benghazi? How can we vote to actually move to a vote on whether or not he should be confirmed when Benghazi? So we will see tomorrow whether or not the Republicans continue to do this. But honestly, Benghazi.
Isn't it kind of unbelievable that Benghazi is not like an intrinsically unserious thing, right? Like it was actually a real thing that happened. It was really awful. There's things worth looking at. And they've managed to turn like the murder of U.S. ambassadors into just a joke.
Fast and furious.
Right.
Fast and furious. They've got to come up with like another alliterative. Maybe it's like Benghazi been bad, so that they can sell this on Fox News better. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Bobby Kennedy.
Keep on rolling like a tone. Oh.
We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. It is a pleasure to welcome to the program a guy I co-host Ring of Fire with every weekend. Check your local listings. Robert Kennedy Jr., welcome to the program, Bobby.
Sam, thanks for having me.
So yesterday you were out in front of the White House with 45, 48 other people who ended up getting arrested. Tell us why you got arrested yesterday, Bobby.
We were protesting the XL pipeline, or demonstrating to support what we hope will be President Obama and John Kerry's decision to derail the XL pipeline, which, according to James Hansen, who's NASA's top climatologist, if it is constructed, will be, quote, game over, end quote, for the climate and for civilization. And this project is a giant boondoggle that will enrich a handful of billionaires, oil service companies and oil refining companies, including the Koch brothers, who are sort of two of the major, David and Charles Koch, two of the major financiers for this project and backers and supporters of this project, while impoverishing the rest of humanity, threatening future civilization, threatening life in the oceans. And it's really, in my view, a criminal enterprise, because they're stealing things that belong to the rest of us. They're stealing the air. They're stealing the water. They're stealing life in the oceans. You know, Sam, the Puget Sound Keeper has reported that for 7 years they haven't been able to cultivate oysters in Puget Sound because of ocean acidification. The carbon in the air is not only rising sea levels, but it's also acidifying the ocean, so that the organisms that live in the ocean, the corals, the clams, the bivalves, many of the shellfish, and a lot of zooplankton who have calcium skeletons, essentially, or exoskeletons, will no longer be able to mobilize calcium out of the water column and won't be able to create shells or skeletons for themselves. And this is not something that's happening, you know, 50 years from now. It's happening today. And it's happening because the way we're burning carbon. And the tar sands in northern Alberta are not just destroying one of the great wild ecosystems left in the world, in northern Alberta, but they, if we actually burn them, they have as much oil up there as Saudi Arabia, the entire Saudi Arabian oil fields from the beginning of their history. And each barrel of oil produces three times the amount of carbon as every barrel of Saudi oil. So this really, if they're given a gate to sell this to the world community, there will be no stopping them, and they will burn every bit of it, and our children will have a world that is extraordinarily impoverished and diminished. So this is a project. Now, I don't like doing civil disobediences. As you know, I was in prison in 2001 for civil disobedience in Puerto Rico for the summer of 2001. But I'm an officer of the court. I'm an attorney. I've brought hundreds of cases. I would prefer to be in court. But in cases where democracy has failed, where our justice system has been subverted, as has happened here, the only recourse for citizens who feel a moral responsibility to future generations or to the poor of our planet is civil disobedience. And we, in some cases, I believe that we not only have a right, but we also have a duty to engage in civil disobedience. And here, democracy and our justice system has been undermined. The oil companies announced $100 billion in profits. When I talk about this year, the richest corporations in the history of mankind, that's not revenues, that's profits. and they're using large amounts of that profit to funnel to our nation's capital to make indentured servants of our congressmen and our other political officials to fix the laws and rig the system so that American people can't participate in the decision-making. We had beside me on the fence, on the White House fence yesterday, we had a lot of Nebraska farmers who want to stop this pipeline from going through their fields, but they have no property rights. The pipeline companies have rigged the system so that they don't even have to ask permission. They can just put it right through your property, and it doesn't matter what it does to the value of your property. Now, as a good example, the biggest barrier, the biggest impediment to wind and solar, which are cheaper than oil and gas, much cheaper according to the latest reports out of Texas, the biggest barrier is that we don't have electric transmission systems in this country. But renewables need electric transmission systems, but we don't have the power that the oil companies have to barrel over local regulations and local property owners. And as a result of that, Sam, over the past 10 years, there have been fewer than 600 miles of electric transmission systems built in this country. While during the same period, there's been over 10,000 miles of gas pipeline. And that illustrates the extent to which they've subverted our democracy and our capacity of localities and individuals to participate in the political process and challenge their plans for our country.
You know, you mentioned the fact that there was a wide array of activists and protesters who were arrested yesterday. You mentioned that ranchers from the Midwest and obviously folks who had, and as you're explaining, their property taken by eminent domain.
The ranchers from Texas, there were farmers from the Midwest, there were Catholic priests, there were a number, virtually every denomination was, religious denomination was represented on the handcuffed to the White House fence. I was standing beside Julian Bond, one of the iconic figures of the civil rights movement. So everybody recognizes that all of these issues are ultimately intertwined. The civil rights of the American people, democracy, justice, and you know, the sovereignty of localities and the proprietorship of land ownership and property ownership in this country.
That's why I wanted to highlight is that you have you've written extensively about the concept of the commons, and what we're seeing here is, and you describe this as a criminal syndicate. What we're seeing is essentially people, certain entities, oil companies' profits, basically making their profits off of costs that are spread to the rest of us. I mean, this is not the parallels between what we see with the financial crisis, where profit was taken for private hands, and then the costs and the risk were ended up socialized because we ended up backstopping them. This is what happens every day when we talk about burning these fossil fuels, is that the externalities and the costs are borne by all of us, and in this instance, also our future generations, because of what it's doing to the planet. Talk a little bit more about the sort of that aspect of this. I mean, of course, the overriding issue here is that it is a threat to our civilization. But the dynamic in which this threat is taking place is really driven by the same forces that we are fighting against on a daily basis in terms of corporations imposing their costs on all of us and not pricing in those costs into their profit-making machines.
Well, that's absolutely right. And that's why, you know, Abraham Lincoln said during the Civil War, I have the South in front of me and I have the bankers behind me. And for my nation, I fear the bankers more, because he understood that these great agglomerations of corporate power, private corporate power, were the biggest threats to democracy. And you know, these were the same forces, the the kind of feudal plutocracies that our ancestors, our European ancestors, fled Europe to come to the United States to escape and to, you know, own their own property and participate in their own government and govern themselves. And now we're returning to this plutocracy and, you know, the sock puppets for the plutocrats of the Republican Party. They should be called the Replutocrat Party. Because that's where they're taking us. And what, you know, they say they believe in free market capitalism, but actually what they're really giving us is a kind of corporate crony capitalism and a true free market. Actors in the marketplace would have to pay all the costs of bringing their products to market. What the oil industry and the other carbon cronies do, all of these incumbents in our energy system, including the nuke industry, oil, coal, gas, and nuke, is they cannot compete on a level playing field with wind or solar. And it's not just me saying this. It's people like David Crane, who's the head CEO of NRG, which is the biggest energy producer in America. NRG runs nuke plants, coal plants, oil plants, and gas plants. And what David Crane wrote in the New York Times recently in an op-ed with me is that in over 20 states now, it's cheaper. The cheapest way for him to get electrons to his customers is by investing in solar. The Texas Energy Association recently, last week, produced a report that said wind, even with gas at record lows, the wind is actually cheaper than gas. And so we know we can beat them. The only way that they're able to beat us is because of the huge subsidies that they are given every year, not only direct subsidies, hundreds of billions of dollars of direct subsidies from the federal government, but all of these indirect subsidies that you talk about that we also call externalities. The fact that every freshwater fish in America is now contaminated with mercury because of coal-burning power plants. And that imposes costs on the American people. Ozone and particulates from coal and oil burning cause almost $500 billion in health care costs to the American people every year. We could pay Obamacare 30 times over simply by eliminating our reliance on coal and oil. We could fund the entire energy system in a year by doing that. And that's not even talking about the other costs, many, many other costs, including the oil spill in the Gulf, the oil spill in Valdez, the millions of oil spills that occur every year and poison our waters, poison our fish, poison our children with benzene, toluene, and xylene that cause escalations in cancer rates, and the wars. OMB estimates that the current war in Iraq, which is an oil war, and, you know, although Bush and Cheney, who were both oil men, tried to kind of pretend this isn't an oil war, it grew out of the justification for the war was that Saddam Hussein was violating the UN sanctions that he had agreed to following the first Gulf War. And during the first Gulf War, if you go back, the first President Bush was very, very direct and frank and clear to the American people, and he called it the Bush Doctrine, that we have a right to go abroad. And, you know, the American people at that time were saying, why are we going to the Mideast to get in a war to protect one dictator, you know, the emir of Kuwait, from another dictator? Saddam Hussein in Iraq. Why do we care what these dictators do to each other? Why are we wasting American lives and treasure and blood and equipment? And he said the reason is because Mideastern oil is a vital American resource. And the Bush Doctrine was that we, the American people and the American military, had a right to go into foreign countries and to meddle in affairs of foreign sovereign nations, because our oil happened to be, God had put it under, you know, these Mideastern countries, and we had a right to go protect it. So it was clearly an oil war. Hello?
Yeah, and so the enormous amount of cost that our society is bearing This is not even to mention, essentially, in some, the GOA came out today and said that that climate change now poses one of the most serious risks to the American economy and to our government's finances because we're not prepared to deal with the
other. A guy from CNN yesterday was asking me just before I got arrested, you know, what real harm is global warming causing? And I said, well, you know, it's causing millions of environmental refugees, an estimated 10 million a year already. And he said, he wrinkled his brow and he said, what do you mean by environmental refugees? And and what do we care about these foreigners? And I said, well, it's not just, you know, people, it's not just Africans whose countries have turned into deserts. And it's not just Bengalis whose nation is being buried, or, you know, people from these island nations who are being inundated by waters and waves. It's people in Far Rockaway, which I visited after Sandy, you know, 3 weeks after Sandy, who were still homeless or living in, you know, mold infested hovels with no heat and no energy, having to burn their stoves to keep their asthmatic children warm at night. And, you know, all of us saw what happened after Katrina, when hundreds of thousands of environmental refugees were forced out of New Orleans. And these kind of storms are record wildfires, record floods, record storms, record snowfalls, and record droughts are driving people, environmental refugees, not just in other parts of the world, but right here in America. And there are hundreds of thousands.
Yes, God forbid we should be worried about those people around the globe. I guess, you know, at least there was something to satisfy the CNN reporter in terms of domestic. Our government has spent more than $80 billion on disaster relief since 2004. The number of disaster declarations hitting a record in 2011 with 98. There still seems to be this huge disconnect. Now, let's talk specifically about the politics of this. President Obama, you started off by saying President Obama and Secretary of State Kerry can, without really any, I mean, the quality of this is fairly mundane, that they simply do not have to issue, they simply reject the permit for this pipeline to cross the border. Give me your sense of when you think that decision will be made one way or another, and give me your sense, if you have one, of where this decision's going to head. I mean, particularly in light of...
Well, you know, it was supposed to be made within the next couple of weeks, and that originally the signals that they were sending was that there would be a decision within the next couple of weeks. Many of the omens were bad ones. You know, statements that Senator Kerry Senator Kerry and President Obama made about the importance of our friendship with Canada, referencing this pipeline, and the statements by the governor of Nebraska and others saying that we're ready to roll on this. We're not good omens, but I don't believe that this pipeline is going to be approved. I believe that both John Kerry, who I know very well, who has a deep moral center, who loves the oceans, who loves the waterways, who, you know, as much as any senator, except in our history, except for perhaps Al Gore, understood and accepted the catastrophic future that the science predicts for if we continue to burn carbon the way that we are. And as I said, you know, this pipeline, according to James Hansen, is game over for the climate. And I think President Obama has a deep moral center, and that global warming really concerns him, and he understands it. And I don't think Rahm Emanuel, who is my friend, that he gave a crap about it. But I think Obama does, that he wants to do something about it. Even in his first term, he kept saying, what are we going to do about this? What are we going to do about global warming? And he was dismissed by Rahm and by Daley and by other people within the cabinet who just go silent when he said that. But, you know, that's documented that he really was concerned about this. And I think he understands that we have a responsibility to future generations, and he's not the kind of person who would simply walk away from that because the oil companies were telling him to. You know, and, you know, really, Sam, you know it and I know it. Koch brothers did everything they could to destroy him. The oil industry gives 90% of its revenues to the Republican Party. You know, they are, you know, they're like the NRA, except that they've got $100 billion a year instead of just $1 billion, you know, to give away to these guys. And they're, and, you know, they're using it all against Obama. He's in his second term now. If I were him, I'd just be fed up with doing their bidding, and I would start standing up to him. And I think that, you know, just even politically, he should just say, no, we're going to go a different direction in our country. And we, you know, we love you in Canada. You are our closest allies, our best neighbors. But, you know, we don't want you to hurt yourself by making your economy dependent on selling poison to the rest of the world.
And we should say,
it's a poison that's going to come back and hurt you.
And we should,
and, you know, Alberta has a lot of ways to generate energy, and I spend a lot of time in Alberta. They've got very good wind and have excellent solar, and they, you know, they ought to be exporting that and not destroying the taiga and poisoning their water for future generations.
And we should say that that the reports that we've heard in terms of, well, if we don't build this pipeline through this country, if we do not allow this it's really not even accurate to call it oil as much as this sort of viscous material to travel through our country.
It has the consistency, ironically, of a hockey puck. And that's, you know, they have to superheat it in order to get it into a liquid form so that they can put it into a pipeline. Then they have to keep that pipeline super hot for 2,000 miles. And if the, you know, if the heat goes out on it, it will turn into a 2,000-mile-long candlestick, you know, and that we won't be able to do anything with. And it's extremely acidic, and, you know, it burns through these pipelines, and it burns through one of the first pipeline that they put across the Yellowstone River. It quickly burned through that pipeline and polluted 30 miles of the, killed the fish in 30 miles of the Yellowstone River, which again is an iconic river for our country.
And the point being, though, that there's been, you know, one of the arguments that we've heard is that if we don't allow them to ship it through this country, to be refined in the Gulf Coast and then, of course, shipped out from there, they're just going to do it on their own coast. But it's not so simple, right? I mean, there's my understanding is that there is huge opposition to transporting this stuff through Canada to their west coast, and particularly
British Columbia.
And
it would have to go over the Rocky Mountains, which is a daunting trip. You know, I just came back from the Canadian Rockies. In fact, I was on the divide between climbing over the divide between BC and Alberta, and, you know, that's a very difficult trip, a very difficult place to build a pipeline, and then it's going to end up in the entire coast of British Columbia are critical salmon fisheries. And, you know, and British Columbia is a tourist destination. It doesn't make money from oil. It makes money from tourism. And a lot of that land is land that's controlled by First Nations who are traditionally salmon people. They call themselves the people of the salmon. Many of those mid-coast tribes, Native groups and First Nations, and, you know, none of them want the oil in their watershed. No, they don't want the oil tankers leaking. They don't want the leaks from the pipe. They don't want the construction of the pipe. They don't want the trucks. and they don't want the inevitable leaks that are going to permanently destroy their salmon the way that they have permanently destroyed the salmon up in Valdez. You know, they're still, those salmon there still haven't recovered. I mean, the fishes up there have not recovered. They still have high levels of benzene, toluene, and xylene, other contaminants, and their high levels of their nursery age young are deformed, and I'm talking in, you know, 40-50 percentages of them, and you know, many of the eggs are simply unviable. So they don't, people know this in BC, and they don't want it. And, you know, our job is we can't control what they do in BC, but we can control what we do here.
And the fact is that...
We ought to start building wind and solar and building transmission instead of pipelines.
These First Nations peoples, they have actually far more political power in many respects in Canada relative to, sadly, our own citizens do in this country. And they represent
a much tougher
power
in Canada than here.
And just lastly, will you just address for a brief moment this myth that somehow we're going to see a lot of jobs coming from this pipeline? My understanding is that once you build the pipeline, which a lot of it has been built in this country anyways, but once you build it, it's not going to take many people to make sure they're going to fly a helicopter up and down this pipeline and check their sensors. We're not talking about a lot of jobs.
I think, you know, I don't remember exactly, but the State Department study said it would be something like 120 jobs, something like that. You know, very few jobs.
120.
I'm not sure the exact number, but I'm quite sure it was, you know, below 200.
And so... Yeah, I mean, when you get that low, almost it's irrelevant. I mean, obviously, this is not the job maker that people say it is, and there's some that are saying that even what you're going to see is raising gas prices in the Midwest because these pipelines at various times are going to be used to basically get the cheap gas out of that area, and so there's no economic benefit but for a very narrow group of carbon interests. I know you've got to go in a moment,
right,
Bobby, but is there anything else you want to add? And first off, you know, again, appreciate your going down there, and I have a tremendous amount of admiration for you. I've seen the video of you being arrested, walking off in those plastic cuffs, and really appreciate your lending yourself to this cause.
You know, the last time I got arrested was in 2001 and over the issue of Vieques in Puerto Rico, and I had been representing 10,000 citizens of Vieques in a suit against the U.S. Navy. I won the suit, but some crooked judges in Puerto Rico wouldn't enforce the injunction, and the mayor and the some of the public officials asked me to do a civil disobedience, and I said, okay, how long do you think I'll be in jail? And they said, just a couple of hours, and it ended up 34 days. So when they told me this time it's just going to be a couple of hours, I was skeptical, but the Capitol Police were wonderful, and they were kind and good-humored, and they were gentle with everybody, and they processed this quickly, and I got out by 3:30 and was able to catch a plane to Charleston and give a speech down there. I have a lawsuit with our friend Mike Papantonio down in Charleston against DuPont for polluting the city of Parkersburg with some deadly chemicals and then lying about it for 60 years. Oh, and I was able to get to that meeting by the evening. So it was a good day, although a long one.
Well, Bobby, again, thank you so much for your work, and I appreciate your coming on today and talking about this with us.
Great. Thanks for having me, Sam. I will see you next Tuesday for our Saturday show.
Great. All right. Thanks, Bobby. All right, folks. That is our the first half of our program. I have been remiss in putting out a plea for new members. I don't know what it is with January, but there's been a lot of people who have hit some financial hardships. And so if you are not one of those people, but you enjoy listening to this program every day, you enjoy the caliber of interviews that we do and the stories that we cover and want, frankly, just don't want the corporate media to be the only media that is around, it's incumbent upon you to support programs like ours. I would, of course, appreciate you supporting ours as opposed to ones that are like ours. But that said, the other programs need support, too. But if you can become a member at majority.fm, you can do so today by just going to majority.fm, clicking on become a member. Very easy, very painless, and relatively cheap. I don't know, 30 cents a day, 35 cents a day. And if you like to listen to audio content, you will have more than enough when you become a member, ladies and gentlemen.
Sorry, am I up? That footage of Bobby being arrested is on the website. And I don't know, I found it kind of moving. I think people should take a look at it.
He went down there also. I think his son Connor also got arrested. And like he said, he was joined by another 40-some-odd people of...
48 people were arrested in front of the White House. And, you know, and you have a... It's him getting arrested, but you see other people out there, and it's very, you know, it's nice to see.
Check out the video at majority.fm. Other ways of supporting the show, click on our Amazon link. Just go to majority.fm, support the show. Click on that link, bookmark it. Always use that to purchase your stuff on Amazon. We get a little kickback. And justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. If you haven't gotten a Valentine's gift, maybe you can go and buy as much chocolate as possible. I can tell you that longtime listeners of this program may recall that Valentine's Day is always rather difficult for me. I am something of a Valentine's Day skeptic, despite the fact that...
That's shocking.
No, I know that's shocking to people. Despite the fact that my understanding is the first Valentine's Day card was created in Worcester, Massachusetts.
Is that really true?
I believe so, yeah.
Well, Worcester is the Paris of the Northeast.
Worcester actually was the Paris of the 80s. I think Somerville was the Paris of the 90s. That's my understanding. But and of course, you know, the rocket was developed in Worcester. Robert Goddard, Shrewsbury technically, but Worcester
was
Metro.
Freud involved somehow importantly?
Freud did not invent the rocket. Freud was a famous psychoanalyst from Vienna, but he did his only speaking engagement, public speaking engagement in the country was at Clark University. Maybe that's what you're referring to.
That was actually...
The first spacesuits also from Worcester. The M1 developed in Worcester.
Listen, you're just hearing this now, folks, but I have to deal with these two love fest of Massachusetts 24/7. It's unbelievable.
They are bro fests.
That's right. It's a bro fest. It's a two massholes get together. But Valentine's Day is always difficult for me because it's also my wife's birthday. So that just becomes a sort of very convoluted type of thing. And, you know, it's not easy. I mean, look, I'm not the most forward thinking person. So there are times where I forget to make a reservation for my wife's birthday. And apparently that's a little tricky to do at 11 p.m. on February 13th. Because apparently everybody likes to go out for Valentine's Day. Now, I'm not aware of that because I don't go out for Valentine's Day, but I always seem to forget. And so, you know, we'll be eating dinner tonight at about 4:45. it's very easy to get reservations at that time. But if for those of you out there who loved ones or significant others who, you know, really invest a lot in their birthday and then convolute it with Valentine's Day. And then on top of that are 37 weeks pregnant. You can understand the enormous amount of pressure that I am under at this moment. So I guess that's my way of saying, but just become a member. Make me feel a little better. Also, a little bit of housekeeping. Monday, I believe there will be no show because my daughter has vacation and we don't have anyone to take care of her. And it will be, fortunately for all of you, vacation was cut short because of the snow days that we missed last December, which I did not take off. I lose that vacation. But in the coming weeks, at one point, my understanding is that my new child will decide to be born. And at that time, my schedule will be sporadic. The office crew will take over the mics for a very, very limited and narrow period of time. We're hoping to have others. It's very hard to find people who you know, logistically can fill in for us. And so we will have probably some archival shows, and it'll be a hodgepodge depending upon when my in-laws and my parents are able to come in and help out. There may be days I come in, you know, like on a Wednesday or on a Friday, and I don't know. I cannot begin to, we're debating as to whether or not we should move in the next 3 weeks, apparently, a debate that I thought had been tabled, but has been back up. I know people think that's crazy, and it is, but I'm not driving this bus.
You thought you would put a hold on that debate?
I thought we had put a pin in it, and then every time I come home, or seemingly at 3 a.m, that pin seems to be pulled out. And then I get woken up, and it's like, maybe we should move. And
I think we should go to the better half of the show now.
To rest Sam's mind on one of these fronts, everyone should tweet him at Sam Cedar and let him know how much you're all looking forward to the Majority Report with Matt Binder and Michael Brooks.
Yes.
How you're underestimating us, and how when you insult us, you're really insulting yourself.
I'm going to be looking forward to all the fake accounts that you guys set up on Twitter. All right, so we're going to take a break. Tomorrow on the program, Cliff Schechter will be rejoining us. And I'm not sure who's going to do movies, but we're not going to be able to have the big face-off. That's probably not going to happen until next week for reasons that I don't want to go into because I don't want to hurt Matthew Film guys. And I haven't had a chance to watch a movie because you just cannot understand the insanity that is going on in my apartment right now.
It would be great if you get around to playing BioShock before you get to watch that movie.
That would be fantastic. All right, folks, we'll see you in the better half. 646-257-3920 is the number. 646-257-3920 if you want to be a part of the program. We have a special line for people who use the term emo progs in public. That is 646-257-3920. If you're a libertarian, please don't hesitate to call us at 646-257-3920. That's your special libertarian number with a healthy dose of freedom on that line. And, of course, the IM machine is being fired up as we speak. You can IM me at Majority FM. In the better half, Guantanamo mics, Scott Brown's new mic. Freedom works in such a cesspool. And of course, this heartwarming story of Ron Paul thanking his many, many fans and tireless volunteers by suing them.
Through the UN.
Through the UN. I mean, that's like literally like, I don't know. That's I can't even imagine. Maybe in the better half I will describe it because it will be in grotesque terms. But it's almost like, I don't know, my wife sending Dick Cheney into the office to steal all of our audio equipment. I don't know what... We'll be right back after this.
Oh, yeah, this is one of the new versions of La Poupée we received. This is the Italian one.
Yes. All right. Yes, sir.